This is one of a series of verses in which Krishna is discussing his appearance in this world. In the course of speaking, Krishna has surprised Arjuna. This chapter begins with Krishna discussing about how he previously spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the Sun God. Imam vivasvate yogam prutta varana hamagyayan vivasvan malave praho manur nikshvaka vibhavit. Krishna is explaining that this knowledge is eternal and that he previously spoke it to Vivasvan, the Sun God, who spoke to Manu, who spoke to his son Ikshvaku. And in this way, Krishna explains, evam parampara praptamimam rajashri yogudu sakala neha mahata yoga nashta panantapa. In this way, Krishna explains, the knowledge is coming down by parampara. That means one who is guru, it means one who is heard from his guru, and he repeats that to his disciple who in future becomes guru. But in course of time, this chain of knowledge has become lost. Therefore, Krishna says, I am speaking this knowledge again to you. Arjuna interrupts to make a question about a different point. Krishna is speaking about how this knowledge is eternal and has been handed down in human society. But Arjuna asks, but wait a minute. Aparam janmana, what is it? Aparam janmana. He says that you are younger. Aparam bhavato janma. Param janma vivasvata. You are younger than Vivasvan. He's born well before you. Now, Vivasvan spoke to Manu. Manu spoke to Ikshvaku. This must have all taken place a long time ago, because Ikshvaku lived a long time ago. So how is it possible that long ago you spoke this knowledge to Vivasvan? Because Krishna is just the same age as Arjuna, at this time about 125 years old. In those days people used to live longer lives. They didn't have fertilizers on their food. They didn't have chemical fertilizers on their food. And there are many other reasons why they lived longer. So Arjuna was thinking that, well, Krishna is just the same age as me. Actually, Krishna appears something like an ordinary human being. People at that time used to live for some hundreds of years. In Dwarpa Yuga, the people generally live for 1,000 years. But this time was the Sandhya, or the time of the end of Dwarpa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, people live for 100 years or less. So the people at that time, it seems they were living a little more than 100 years. So Krishna was also, just to keep parity with the people of that time, he appeared as the same height, about 13 feet would be about, about 4 meters. People were a little taller at that time too. In this country there are many tall people, isn't it? I heard many Yugoslavians join the basketball teams in America, but not that tall. So Krishna was quite big compared to today's heights of people. Krishna is every size in any size, whatever he likes. So anyway, Arjuna was asking, how did you speak to the Sun God? It doesn't seem to make sense. If I say to you, well, I just walk up to you and say, well, I remember I had a similar conversation with Napoleon. Just say, just wait a minute, and then phone up the hospital. Could you come and please take this personal, right? But Arjuna was rather surprised. So he was asking Krishna. He knew for Krishna anything's possible. But at the same time, due to his affection for Krishna, he used to think of him just the same as me. Krishna and Arjuna were very intimate friends. And they would spend most of their time together. They would go hunting together, swimming together. They would eat together. After eating, they would lie down on the same bed together. And sometimes, just like Kshatriyas, they would talk about their great deeds. They would boast to each other what I've done. And Arjuna used to think, well, I'm just the same as Krishna. So he would joke about Krishna sometimes, make jokes at his expense. But at the same time, from time to time, Arjuna understood that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he's asking Krishna, how is it possible? How did you speak to the Sun God previously? You were born from Devaki, just a short time ago. So Krishna explains, Bahuni mevi atita nijanmani tava chajana. I have had many births, you have had many births. Krishna already explained at the beginning of his instructions. Tihino svinyata dehe komaram yobananja tata dehantara pratihi dhiras tatra namu hiti. The body is changing from boyhood to youth to old age, and the next change is to change body. Dhira, one who is self-realized, he is not disturbed by this change. And Krishna further explains, Vasansi jianani yata vihaya navani granati naroparani tatashirani vihajinani anyani sangani nagani dehi. That just as old clothes, you throw them away and you put on new ones. So in the same way, by the laws of material nature, when your body gets old, it's thrown away and you get another one. So Krishna says that I've had many births, you have had many births. I've already explained this. Tanya aham veda sarvani natvang veda paramtapa. I can remember them, you cannot. Now, the verse we're reading today. Ajopi sanavirya na bhutana mishwaropi san prakatim swam adhishthaya sambhavami atmamaya. Yeah, you can get the translation, please. Now, how is this that Krishna remembers, Arjuna doesn't? Krishna says, Aja, I am unborn. Actually, every living being is unborn. We only appear to be born. But Krishna further qualifies his statement by saying, Avyayatma, my body never deteriorates. Material bodies, they deteriorate, and when they are worn out, you get new ones, just like changing clothes. But Krishna's body does not deteriorate. He's not under the control of time. He is the controller of time. Therefore, he doesn't forget. He's the controller of everything. He says later in Bhagavad Gita that Matasmite Gyanam Apohanam Cha, from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. We are under his control, we forget. By his grace we can remember some things, not very much. But Krishna doesn't forget. He remembers everything. Because his body never deteriorates. He doesn't have material brain cells that store memory. He remembers everything. By his own transcendental potencies, which are not different from him. In the Upanishads, it's mentioned that the Supreme Lord's potencies, they work in different ways and they're known in different ways. The main potencies are the potencies of knowledge, of power, strength, and activity. So all these potencies are fully under Krishna's control. Not that he doesn't even have to regulate them. It's not that he's consciously controlling all the potencies, but they automatically act under his control. So one of the potencies is mentioned here, Atmamaya, his internal potency, the Yogamaya potency, by which he appears in this world. The Yogamaya potency is a potency of Krishna's which arranges for his pastimes. It also arranges so that his devotees, they're also in Maya. Maya means that which is not. So his devotees are also in Maya, but not Mahamaya. By Mahamaya, one thinks that Krishna is not God, I am God. But by Yogamaya, one also thinks Krishna is not God. But he's not envious of Krishna. He's fully absorbed in love of Krishna, either as servant, friend, parent, or lover. So Arjuna is temporarily overcome by Yogamaya, acting as Mahamaya, as if he's a conditioned soul. And Krishna is explaining that I am different to you. I am the Supreme Lord. Your duty is to serve me. Arjuna always does that automatically anyway. But Krishna is taking this opportunity arranged by his Yogamaya potency to explain the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all the people in the world. There are many Vedic scholars who are envious of Krishna. And even when they hear from Bhagavad Gita about Krishna's appearance in this world, because they're so envious, they misinterpret it. They're very much envious of Krishna being the absolute truth. And though they may speak of the absolute truth, commonly known in Sanskrit language as Brahma, but they refuse to accept Krishna's identification with Brahman, and they prefer to visualize the absolute truth as impersonal. Here, Krishna is rebutting such ideas. He is defeating such ideas. Krishna was standing before Arjuna, and he reveals in the Bhagavad Gita that his form is transcendental. His form is the original absolute truth. Those who think otherwise, Krishna says, are simply rascals. These are the words of Krishna. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mam buddhayaha. Krishna says, anyone who thinks that my transcendental form is a transformation of the impersonal, unmanifest, such a person is simply a fool. Manishinta, what is that verse? Avajananti mam mudha manishintanam ashritam param bhavma jananto. Krishna says that those who think that my transcendental form, same thing as I said, avajananti mam, those who don't know that my transcendental form is the supreme absolute truth, those who do not know my transcendental nature, they're simply fools and rascals. Krishna establishes this very strongly here. But, admittedly, it is difficult to understand. It is not possible to understand simply by intellectual brain power. In fact, it is always, this understanding of Krishna is always hidden from those who try to understand him by the intellectual method. Not that intellect should not be used in understanding Krishna conscious philosophy. But if we think that by intellect alone we can understand Krishna, that is not possible. This is discussed by Srimati Kunti Devi in her very important prayers, which are recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which she discusses the mysteries of Krishna's appearance in this world. And she discusses many important points about the Godhead of Krishna. So that begins with the verse Kunti Uvacha Namashe Purusham Tvadyam Ishwaram Prakriti Param Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam. What's the last thing? Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam Antar Bahira Vastitam. Beginning with 18. You can give the translation. Kunti Devi immediately establishes Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in this verse we're reading today from Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that he is Ishvara, he is the controller. But still, the impersonalist philosophers, they may postulate that even though Krishna is Ishvara, he's God, but still God is under the control of the material nature. Very strange philosophy. And he's a product of the mode of goodness. And beyond Krishna, they have this funny idea, there's something beyond Krishna. There's the impersonal Brahman. And here, Kunti Devi smashes this idea by saying that Krishna is Ishvara, he's the controller, but he's Prakriti Param, he's beyond the material nature. He's superior to the material nature. And she addresses him, Namaste Purusham Tvadyam. I offer my obeisances to you, who are the original person. So he's the original person beyond material nature. That means that before the nature comes the person. Not that before, nature comes first and then person. That is logical also, as Srila Prabhupada many times pointed out, that when we say nature, there must be someone's nature. We are produced, material people and bodies in the material world are produced of material nature, but still that nature must be someone's nature. Nature means that, you see, the word is here, prakriti. Another word for that is shakti, which means energy. So energy is always produced from an energetic source who is superior to that energy. It must be superior because the energy is produced of that source. It means the energy is included within that source, plus the source has the energy and more. When we say nature, whose nature? Here Kunti Devi gives the answer. Krishna's nature. She goes on to explain, Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam Antar Bahira Vastitam. You are not seen by everybody. Although you are within and without everything. This is the mystery of Krishna. We can't understand this. It doesn't appear to be conceivable according to the laws of physics. How can you be inside something and outside something at the same time? If we say, my father is inside the room, and someone says, well, I just saw him outside the room. He's inside the room and outside the room. How is it possible? He's either inside or he's outside. And Krishna is inside and outside of everything. The whole universe is produced from him. So he's beyond the universe. But by another expansion, he enters within the universe and within every atom. So this is not understandable according to the laws of physics, or even according to what we might call common sense. But Krishna is not common. So you cannot be understood by common sense. If Krishna was under the laws of physics, then he'd just be an ordinary person like us. And he's the controller of those laws. He's not under the control of those laws. Therefore, he can act in any way just as he likes. He makes the laws and he can break the laws. He has his own way of acting. Now, he comes to this world. This is explained elaborately by Kunti Devi. But when he comes, he cannot be understood by everybody. Maya javani kachanam agyad bhuksajam abhyanam na lakshase murha desha nato na gyandharo yata. Again, the word murha is used, a very important word. This explains, people say, well, God is everywhere, why can't I see him? The atheists, they protest in this way. So the simple answer is because you are a murha. You don't have the qualification. Qualification, you're disqualified. Murha means agya. You don't know. You don't know Krishna. Krishna can only be known by devotional service. Naham vedayana tapasa nadanena na chejaya. Krishna explains when he showed universal form to Arjuna, that he showed the universal form, and then again he showed the four-handed form, and then again he showed to Krishna, to Arjuna, his original form, the two hands, and he told Arjuna that you cannot understand this form not by studying the Vedas, not by performing austerities, not by giving charity, not by performing formal worship. Shakya evam vidho drashtam drishtavahan asimam yata. It's not possible by all these things to see. And how can Krishna be seen? How can Krishna be understood? Bhaktyatunanya shakya ev aham evam vidho jana gyatam drashtam chatadvena praveshtam chaparantapa. Krishna says, only by undivided devotional understanding of service, this is, can I be understood as I am and thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So to the atheist who says, well, show me God. I want to see God, otherwise I won't believe in him. The answer is that even if you saw him, you're such a fool, you couldn't understand him. You don't have the qualification. You have to be qualified. Just like Krishna was personally present, but so many people, they didn't recognize him as the Supreme Personality. Kunti Devi gives the example here, that an actor on a stage is not recognized. Even his own children may not recognize it. So in the same way, Krishna is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya. Therefore, those who are envious, they don't recognize him. Aham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samandita mudha yam nabijanati loko mana jamabhyayam. Krishna says in Gita that I'm not manifest. First, she is establishing that even though Krishna comes, he is not recognized by those who are envious of him. He is adhokshaja, which means he's not visible to the mundane eyes. Tata paramahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yogam vidhanatam katam pashyemahi striha. Kunti Devi says that you are not visible to the murhas, but you are visible to the paramahamsas, great, highly elevated persons. And also to the highly qualified philosophers who have become completely purified in heart. What is that process for becoming paramahamsa or completely purified? Bhakti yoga. right? Bhakti yoga, by performing devotional service to Krishna. The same thing Krishna himself stated in Gita. And Krishna reveals himself to the devotee. But she says, Katam pashema hi sriya. How can I, a woman, see you? That is her humility, thinking yourself less important. Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita that everyone can attain to Krishna's lotus feet. It doesn't matter what their background is. Mahi bhaktavya pashacha yepi siu papa yunayaha. Striyavaishas, striyavaishas tata shudras. Tipi anti parangatim. Krishna says, even those who are born of sinful birth, and the Vaishyas, the Shudras, women, all those who might be considered less qualified to take up spiritual life, if they worship me, they can also attain my Krishna. Prabhupada in this Prabhupada gives some clarification. That women, they're not, they're generally, those who are born in women's bodies, they're not generally considered very suitable for spiritual life. Prabhupada writes here, women in general are unable to speculate like philosophers. Their psychological tendency may not be so much philosophical. But they are blessed by the Lord because they believe at once in the superiority and almightiness of the Lord. And thus they offer obeisances without reservation. So Krishna is not, he doesn't reveal himself even to big, big philosophers who are envious of him. But he reveals himself to anyone from any status if they approach him with devotion. Krishna accepted the devotion even of monkeys in his incarnation as Lord Ramachandra. Also, in his original form of Krishna, he was very friendly with the monkeys. He would steal the butter from the gopis and eat as much as he could and feed the monkeys also. And when the gopis would come and say, "Oh, you're stealing my butter, you rascal," Krishna would say, "I'm not stealing your butter. Your butter is useless. You see, I'm giving it to the monkeys. They won't even take it because they're already so full up they can't eat anymore. So, who wants to be a monkey? Be a monkey. Krishna's monkey is very nice. At least you won't go hungry." I mean, all different species of life. There was one squirrel or chipmunk in Ram Leela who attained the mercy of Lord Ram, pushing some grains of sand into the sea to help build a bridge to Lanka. If you see the squirrels in India, they have a grey and they have three lines on their back. So that is said that because Lord Ramachandra stroked them with his fingers, he was very pleased, and so they have the sign of his hand. So even the Aborigine women, Adivasi, Aborigine women in Vrindavan, they would see the kumkum from Krishna had been embracing the gopis, and the kumkum from the gopis' breast would fall on the ground. So the Aborigine women who are not very civilized, even today you see this class of people in India. So they would take that, and they would take the dust from Krishna's lotus feet and smear that on their breasts. In this way, Krishna would accept their feelings for him. So all different species of life. They were all blessed by Krishna. Therefore, Kunti Devi, in her ecstasy, offers her obeisances to the all-merciful Krishna. You can read this translation. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha Namah Pankajanabhaya Namah Pankajamamine Nama Pankaja Netraya Namaste Pankajangaye. So there are many, in the course of her prayers, Kunti Devi recalls the pastimes of Krishna, especially in relationship with herself. She was always praying to Krishna because she was always in danger. Yata Hishi Kesha Kalena Devaki Kanzena Rudha Tichiram Shucharpita Vimochita aham cha saha vaja viho tvayaiva na tena moho vipadkana. She said that you have freed myself and my children from a series of constant dangers. Then she explained some of the more prominent difficulties in her life that Krishna had saved them from. Vishan mahalagne purushad darshanat asad samhaya vanavasa kuchitaha
What a life to lead. That all the time someone's trying to kill you. Duryodhana, first of all, wanted to kill Bhima by poisoning him, because he thought that Bhima is the most dangerous of the Pandavas. If I can get rid of him, then I can handle the rest of them myself. Tried to poison Bhima. Then there was a plot to burn them all alive. Can you imagine this? What if you'd found out that, or not found out, but you were actually administered poison, but somehow you survived? So that would be a big shock for you, wouldn't it? And then, short time after that, the house you're living in is set on fire. So you run away in the forest to escape. And then you meet a big rakshasa. Rakshasa means those who eat men for breakfast. Just like when we meet someone, we say, "Pleased to meet you." So when they met the rakshasa in the forest, Vilimba, he said, "Pleased to meet you." When you meet someone in their home, you expect to get fed. Especially if you're traveling in the forest, you might not get anything to eat. So they might have asked, "Well, what's for breakfast today?" The rakshasa would have replied, "You are for breakfast. Please come, it's time for the meal. I'm eating you." But by the grace of Krishna, Bhima was so powerful he could even kill big rakshasas. Then the worst thing, Asat Sabha, the rascal, the assembly of bad people. This was worse even than the attempts on their life. As Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's why the Kshatriyas, when they were fighting, they would never run away. They would think dying is bad. They would naturally, they don't want to die, so dying is not good. Dying.
I didn't catch the point.
Dying is not good. Dying is bad. You don't want to die. But to run away from the fight and lose your reputation, that's even worse. Better to die. And do you have this phrase in your language, character assassination? Do you have that? Can you say that? You don't have such. You probably don't have it so much in this country. That means when someone or a group of people, they slander another person. They say all bad things about him, so that no one trusts him or no one believes him. Assassination means to kill someone. Character assassination means to kill their good name. So according to the Vedic culture, this character assassination is worse than physical assassination. So they were, the Pandavas, they were in the Asat Sabha, in which the people of all bad character wanted to just wanted to humiliate them. Because they were so envious. Duryodhana, Karna, Shakuni, Dushasana, they're all so envious that, Yudhishthira, you're the king, now you have nothing. We will let you keep the clothes on your body, that's all. You're not the king anymore. But Draupadi, we won't even let her keep the clothes on her body. Ultimate humiliation, they wanted to do. But Krishna saved the Pandavas from such humiliation. Saved Draupadi. There's a story in the Harivamsa, which is a supplement to the Mahabharata, that once Krishna cut his finger. How about that? Krishna also cut his finger. So Draupadi tore a little piece of her sari and wrapped it around. So then later when she called to Krishna, "Help, they're taking my sari." So Krishna gave unlimited cloth. Just to show, if you give a little something to Krishna, Krishna returns it unlimitedly. So the tradition is that everyone should offer something very nice to the Lord. It's like generally ladies like to wear nice saris. At least in India, it's just like people have 20 pairs of shoes or something here. So they may have so many saris. So on a festival day like this, they'll offer to Lakshmi in the temple nice sari. And men will offer some gold. Now, people don't have gold nowadays, but this is the tradition. So they may be thinking that if I offer to God, God will give back to me also. Anyway, that's the beginning of devotion. So that is shown that Draupadi, she gave a little bit of her cloth and Krishna gave unlimited cloth. Then the Pandavas with Kunti, they had to live in the forest. Kunti wasn't, she wasn't in the forest actually most of the time. But the Pandavas, they were suffering so much in the forest, humiliated. Then in the battle, the Pandavas, their forces were outnumbered. Even being outnumbered wouldn't matter that much. If you have a Maharathi fighter, he can fight with hundreds and thousands of men just by himself. So in such battles, the numbers were important, but even more important was who had the best Maharathi fighters. But actually all the best fighters were on the other side. Arjuna and Bhima, they were reputed fighters. And though it wasn't even known before the battle, but it became apparent during the battle, Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, was an even better fighter than his father. But the main reputed heroes were on the other side, particularly Bhishma and Drona. And Ashwatthama was also, the son of Drona, he was also unbeatable. Before the battle, Yudhishthira went to all the great heroes of the other side and asked them, how can we kill you? What is required to kill you? Please tell me. So they gave different replies.
Yes.
Drona said that only if my son Ashwatthama is killed, then only you can kill me. So Yudhishthira asked Ashwatthama, how can we kill you? Ashwatthama said, you can't. At the end of this battle, I will still be alive. So Drona was killed by some cheating method. Thanks to who? Thanks to Krishna.
The vanity Krishna.
Yudhishthira was told, you have to, this Drona, he's killing all our forces. The way he's going on, within 2 days there won't be anyone left. Somehow we have to kill him. They have to kill Drona. They don't want to kill Drona. Arjuna was saying before the fight that, how can we fight with our gurus? Drona is our guru. Krishna said, we have to kill him. But how can we kill him? Because he said, I can only be killed if Ashwatthama is killed. And Ashwatthama can't be killed. Krishna said, there's an elephant called Ashwatthama in our forces. So let's kill him, and then we'll call out, Ashwatthama is dead, and he'll lose all his enthusiasm, and we'll kill him. So Yudhishthira wasn't very happy, because he believed in being truthful. So anyway, he finally agreed, and he thought, all right, Krishna, You call out, Ashwatthama is dead. Krishna said, not me, he won't trust me. Everyone knows I'm a cheat. You have to do it. You're the only one he'll trust. Yudhishthira said, I can't do it, I never told any lie in my life. Well, that's why he'll trust you. Everyone else told lies, but only you didn't. So eventually they came to a compromise that Yudhishthira had to call out, Ashwatthama hata, Ashwatthama is dead. Then immediately after that, Krishna had to blow his conch very loudly. At the same time, Yudhishthira would call out, the elephant is dead. So Yudhishthira didn't tell a lie. And Drona was able to be killed by this method. After this time, Yudhishthira's chariot used to go a little above the ground in recognition of his supreme piety. But after this act of deceit came down. So generally people explain that, you know, he told a lie, so he was deceitful, so his chariot came down. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explained that that can't be the reason, because he was following the order of Krishna, which is the supreme piety. But his chariot came down because he hesitated to follow the order of Krishna, and he only did so with some compromise. Anyway, all the best fighters were on the other side, with the exception of the best fighter of all, who was on the Pandava side, namely Krishna. But he wasn't fighting. He took a vow not to fight, which he also broke. He took a vow not to take up any weapon, which he also broke, because Bhishma Dev forced him to break it. It was only by Krishna's cheating tactics that they were able to win the fight. Of course, Krishna could have just wished them all dead, and they would be all dead. But that wouldn't be any fun. The meaning of lila, pastime, something exciting, some fun. So Bhishma then, Duryodhana, he was an expert diplomat, he knew how to get everyone engaged, good manager. So he saw that Bhishma's, he can finish off the Pandavas by himself. Everyone knew that.
He can't.
No, he can. Everyone knew that Bhishma himself is competent to finish off the Pandavas. But Duryodhana accused him that you are only fighting with half your strength. You're partial to the Pandavas. So he poked him with words. So the Kshatriya, his honor is the most important thing. So he agitated Bhishma. Said that, I must now he's going to fight. Now I'll fight for him. He said, tomorrow I will kill Arjuna. I'll kill all the Pandavas beginning with Arjuna. I'll do it all in one day. Either I will do that, the only thing that can stop me doing that is Krishna. But Krishna promised not to fight. So either I will defeat Arjuna or I promise either I will defeat Arjuna or the only thing that can stop me is if Krishna breaks his promise and Krishna fights. So Duryodhana brought five special arrows that belonged to Bhishma that had special potency in them. You see how they were fighting. You may think bows and arrows, it's like some people from the jungle or something. And you wonder, how can one man, Maharati, how can he fight with 100,000 people? How is it possible? But it wasn't that they were just some simple bows and arrows, but they were Maharathis because they knew the art of imbuing the arrows with mantras. So by the power of mantra, the arrows might break into 50 arrows at once or 100 arrows. Or the arrow would go up in the air and then it would release a shower of bombs or a shower of snakes. So five arrows were there, especially this one is for Yudhishthira, this one is for Bhima, this one is for Arjuna, this is for Nakul, this is for Sahadeva, five arrows. So Duryodhana said, give them to me, I'll look after them. So I don't want you to change your mind, I'll give them to you early in the morning. So it's an emergency. Krishna knows what's going on. So he told Yudhishthira what to do. He's the all-knowing super soul. So he told Yudhishthira, you have to do it like this, I'll tell you what to do. Now at the end, at sunset every day, they would stop the fighting. They didn't have floodlights or anything like that. They didn't have floodlights. At night it was dark and they stopped the fighting. So they would take a bath and then they would relax and eat and plan for the next day. So in the evening, the members of the Pandavas camp would go to the Kauravas camp and they would relax together and eat, and the next day they would be killing each other. Strange, isn't it? You know, even during the World Wars, when the Germans were fighting the British, on Christmas Day, they would stop and they would all come together and sing and drink and dance, and the next day, shooting each other. So Krishna had told Yudhishthira what to do. Actually, Duryodhana owed Yudhishthira some favor. He had some boon which he had to take from Duryodhana at some time. So Yudhishthira reminded Duryodhana that actually you owe me some favor, isn't it? You remember? Duryodhana said, yes, what do you want? If you want, you can take the whole kingdom. We don't need to fight anymore. He was showing his generous spirit. Although he knew Yudhishthira wouldn't say that because people would... That wouldn't be a very honorable way to take the kingdom. So Yudhishthira said, no, you don't give me the kingdom. But you have five arrows you're keeping for Bhishma. You can kindly give them to me. Then when Bhishma heard that, he became so angry. Then he said, either I will kill Arjuna tomorrow or Krishna will have to break his promise. So it happened like that, Bhishma fought so fiercely that Arjuna was overwhelmed. And he was going to kill Arjuna. Arjuna was no longer able to defend himself. Then Krishna became so angry that he was the chariot driver. He wasn't carrying any weapons. So he just jumped down and there was on the battlefield there's some broken chariot wheel. So he picked that up to go and strike Bhishma. Bhishma said, that's it, I broke his promise. So Krishna gained one name at that time. Ratangapani means Ratha means the chariot, Anga means part of the wheel, Pani means hand, so in his hand he's holding. So in so many ways Krishna was cheating. Another time what happened, Abhimanyu, the son of Arjuna, was killed. Although he was a great fighter, he was surrounded by five great fighters, and eventually with great difficulty they killed him. And Jayadratha, who had always been very envious of the Pandavas, he made a military formation by which no one could come to help Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu entered within the forces of the Kauravas, but Jayadratha blocked his way out, so that the leading fighters of the Kauravas, Karna, Bhishma, Drona, all of them, they all surrounded him. Duryodhana, that's 1, 2, 3, no, 5 of them. Ashwatthama, they all surrounded him and eventually they killed him. So Arjuna, when he got this news, he was so upset. He said that tomorrow I will kill this Jayadratha. Either I'm going to kill him or I'll enter into fire and finish myself. So when this news reached the Kaurava camp, Jayadratha said to Duryodhana, "See you later. I'm getting out of here." But Duryodhana thought, "Hey, this is great. We'll put our whole army in front of Jayadratha and keep him at the back. See, if he ran away from the battlefield, then Arjuna's promise wouldn't hold." So that Duryodhana said, "We'll put our whole army in front, and Arjuna will have to defeat our whole army before he can even reach Jayadratha.
Yes.
And so he won't be able to do that, and then he'll have to fulfill his promise. He'll have to die, and then we can win easily."
So
the whole battle was they were trying to get rid of Arjuna and Bhima. So Krishna chastised Arjuna. "Why do you take this stupid promise from? Now I have to solve your problems again." So anyway, the next day Arjuna was fighting like mad, but he had to get through all the big Maharathis, one after another. So he was fighting as he had never fought before. So he was beating one Maharathi after another. But after defeating them, he didn't stop to kill them, because he would just go on to the next section, because he had to reach Jayadratha before the end of the day. So everyone was watching the sun. It's come up, it's going up, 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 up. Now it's midday and Arjuna hasn't even reached halfway. It's pretty good going as far as the Kauravas are concerned. Gradually it's going down, 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 down. And he's still quite a long way from Jayadratha. He's making a lot of progress, but he's got a long way to go. The sun's becoming big and red, and still a long way from Jayadratha. Still going through, fighting, pushing the soldiers away. The sun is going half down. Then it's set. The day was over. Krishna said, "Keep on going." And everyone said, "Well, the day's over." So all the soldiers relaxed, and immediately Arjuna he went on towards Jayadratha. And as he's going past, he said, "Hey, wait a minute, the day's over." Krishna said, "No, it isn't. Look at the sun. It's still up. Krishna's God. He made it come back up again." In the meantime, they reached Jayadratha and killed the rest. So Krishna was helping in so many ways to defeat all the Kaurava forces. So Kunti was remembering that. And she was thinking, actually at that time we were very Krishna conscious. Kunti Devi was thinking, at that time we were very Krishna conscious. Therefore she prayed that, "Let there be more and more dangers." A famous prayer of Queen Kunti. Vipada santa tashashva tatra tatra jagat garo bhavato darshanam yasab apuna bhavadarshanam. That if we have difficulties, then we will see you, we will remember you. And if we remember you, or if we see you, Krishna, Kunti said, then we won't see repeated birth and death. So Kunti Devi went on to speak many important understandings, tattvas, about Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Now, trying to feel what she said, that Navedikas chit bhagavam chikirshitam tadehama nasya nirnam virambanam nayasya kas chit daitos tikarhi chit dveshas chayasmin
Ishamamriti and Nanam is 29. Want to translate that?
Mm-hmm.
No one can understand Krishna's pastimes. This she explains a little further on. That Gopyavide Traikritagasi Dhamatavadya Te Dishashu Kalilandina Sambramaksham Kartanginiya Bhaya Bhavanayas Titasya Samang Vimohyati Bhirapiyat Vibeti. Verse 31.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna is the Supreme Lord, all powerful. But he's afraid of Mother Yashoda. And Mother Yashoda tied him up with a rope. So in this verse 29, she says, Virambanam. It's very difficult to understand. Vishvadman, Achasya Kautur Atmana, Tiryan Rishi Shriyada Sutadanyanta, Virambanam, bewildering. Virambanam means bewildering. Why should Krishna be born? Why should he do that? He's born in different species. He's born as a hog,
as
pig,
also as a person,
man, lion, as a swan, as a fish. Why does Krishna come? What is the necessity for him to come? Actually, Krishna explains this himself in the Bhagavad Gita, this series of verses we're just discussing. Yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Can anyone give the translation? Anyone knows this? Can you say?
Yes, Pandam Gurandabu.
Did he get it right?
Yes, Krishna is manifesting to the
whatever and where, why don't you read it here? Must be chapter 4, text number 1.
Right.
9 or something like that. 8 and 9. Yeah, yeah. The next verse. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dhamma samsthapana thaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Now, just at the beginning of this chapter, Krishna says, evam parampara praptam evam rajashiyo vidusa kalene amata yoga nashta parantapa. The parampara system of religion has been destroyed. Therefore, I come to reestablish. I'm reestablishing it now. And Krishna says here that not only now, but whenever and wherever there is a decline of religion, then I come to reestablish it and to protect the devotees and destroy the non-devotees. Prabhupada explains that the non-devotees, they can be destroyed by Krishna's potencies, that one tidal wave or hurricane or war or disease can wipe out epidemic disease that can wipe out all the non-devotees. So that's not actually required for Krishna to come to do that, but he comes anyway to protect and uplift the devotees. That is his real purpose in coming, and he personally destroys the non-devotees just to give assurance of protection to his devotees. That's also his mercy on the demons. Because if they're killed by Krishna, they get liberation. That's generally impersonal liberation, which is no better than going to hell, according to the Vaishnavas. But that's a mercy on the non-devotees. You have to be a big demon to get killed by Krishna. But that's a mercy on them, because otherwise they perform so many sinful activities and offenses. They'll go to hell for an unlimited time.
Okay.
So Krishna removes all their offenses by killing them.
Okay.
Sends them to cool off for some time in the impersonal Brahman. And then they can come back again to the material world after some time. With all their account of sinful activities cleared up. And particularly Krishna, when he comes in his original form, not in the Vishnu forms, particularly Krishna, delivers even many demons right back to, all the way back to Godhead. But his particular purpose in coming is to please his devotees and to protect his devotees.
Exactly.
Oh, the devotees, they're very anxious to see Krishna. So Krishna comes. As described in these verses by Kunti Devi. Verse 32. Kejid ahoraham jatam punya shlokasya kirtiye yado priyas yandavaye malayasyeva chandanam. Krishna is unborn. But he agrees to be born just for the sake of his devotees. For the glorification of pious kings. It means that Krishna, he appeared in the song of the Moon Dynasty. So all the kings of that dynasty became glorified by Krishna appearing in that dynasty. Particularly, there was one very great devotee king in that dynasty, Yadu Maharaj. So Kunti Devi said, you appeared in his dynasty just as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. Sandalwood trees can grow in a variety of places, but particularly Malaya is famous for sandalwood trees. At least at that time it was. As Prabhupada noted, now it's become famous for rubber trees. That's coming over. I prefer to grow rubber. Sorry, nasty rubber. So Kichidahu, some people attribute Krishna's birth to his mercy upon Yadu and other kings. Oh, that point, I didn't fully explain. That means that, sandalwood can grow anywhere, but especially grows in the Malaya hills. So generally you associate the sandalwood with Malaya sandalwood. Just like in England they say Sheffield steel. Or coal from Newcastle. Coal from Newcastle. So steel can come from anywhere, but Sheffield is famous. So I like that Malaya sandalwood. In the same way Krishna can appear in any family, but he's famous as appearing in the Yadu dynasty.
Yes.
Therefore he's known as Yadava. Yadavaya Madhava. And we're saying our patience is to Yadava. So some people say that that's the reason why he was born, to glorify Yadu and other kings. But others, Apare Vasudevasya Devakyam Yachito Vyagat. Others say that he appeared to Vasudev and Devaki because they prayed for him. Ajastram akshishemaya vadhaya chasura disham. That because they prayed for you, you took birth as their son for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. And other theories are there also. Paravatara naranye Bhuvo nava ivo dhatho siddhantya bhuri bharena jato hi atma bhuvartataha. You can translate. And there are other theories still. Bhave svin klishyamana nam avidya kama karma bihi shravana smaranahani karishyam iti kechana. So actually Krishna comes to do all these things. Krishna comes for all these purposes. Particularly to this purpose, paritranaya sadhanam, to uplift his devotees, to pour nectar upon the devotees. Not only at that time, but at this time also. By performing these pastimes, Krishna has revealed the nature of the spiritual world within the material world. So that even now, those who are living in this world can remember Krishna. We can remember those pastimes. And what is the result of remembering those pastimes? Kunti Devi explains in the next verse, very beautiful verse. Shrinvanti gayanti vinanti apikshnasa smaranti nandanti tavehitam janaha ta eva pasyam chachi achirena tavakam bhavapravaha paramopadam bhujam. Kunti Devi knows the secrets of devotional service. She says that those who hear about you, Krishna, those who glorify you, those who remember your wonderful activities, those who take pleasure in these things, they will get the opportunity to see your lotus feet. And by seeing those lotus feet, you stop the repetition of birth and death. So devotees, they don't demand anything from Krishna. Kunti Devi is here not talking about people who go to the church or temple and say, God, fulfill my material desires. She's talking about the pure devotees who